Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Draft Knicks. Here we go. Welcome to another edition of the Draft Nation podcast. My name is Joe412, and I will, as always, be your host for the next 30 minutes. Before we begin, I want to thank our sponsor, iHeartRadio, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free, all the time, as you know. For those of you who have not listened to our show in the past, Draft Nation is a national e-magazine, and we hyper-focus on all four major sports and their professional drafts. So if you like things like player scouting, or you like mock drafts, you like talking about your team's free agency or salary cap provisions that are going to hurt or hinder or help your team next year, and, of course, any of your favorite teams that we want to talk about, this is the place for that. So with me tonight, we have a former NFL and University of Virginia wide receiver, Billy McMullen. Billy, welcome to Draft Nation, and are you ready to go on the clock?
Let's rock and roll, Joe.
All right, my friend. Well, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your football experience.
Yeah, so I'm a Richmond, Virginia guy. I always tell the story of I was a late bloomer. So I was a guy that would bring the ball to the playground, and I would be the last one to get picked. And so that created a nice little edge on my shoulder that I wanted to get better and better in the neighborhood that I grew up in. So, yeah, around my junior, senior year, I got really, really good, and I had a chance to get some a lot of teams paying interest, you know, in terms of like ACC, Big Ten, Big East. But back then it was Big East. I even had some SEC teams paying attention, like the Kentucky and some of the Volunteers. But back then, the recruitment was totally different. So me and my father, we sort of got our tape out late. Most of the scholarships were gone, and I still was on a track to get my SAT scores. So I went to Fort Union Military Academy, one of the most prestigious, prep schools or post-grad schools in the country. I mean, I went post-grad, and we have about maybe, I don't even want to do the number wrong, but it has to be like 100, 120 guys that have gone to the NFL, from Vinatieri Verdi to we got a lot of guys. A lot of first-rounders came out of there. There's a lot of guys. Matter of fact, I did an event with the Commanders today, and I ran into Josh Morgan. He's a Fort Union guy. I didn't even know about it. I played at Virginia Tech and with the 49ers and back then the Redskins. But, yeah, so I went there, did really well. Loved the school. John Schumann, Coach White, did some big things for me. Got me into help me to get things straight. And last week of recruitment, which was a wonderful thing, UVA came on board. And the funny thing about it is, you know, the coaches and some of the players were pushing UVA to say, hey, this is one of the better receivers we've seen in a long time, you know, had some really good hands. And I had some schools like Rutgers and Hofstra and Tennessee Chattanooga. What was the other team? There was a team in the MEAC. But I had some other teams that liked me, but it was like, hey, I was like, I think I'm a big-time player. And so UVA came in the picture like really late because one of their receivers decommitted. I think his name is Andre Harrison. He played with Michael Vick, so he decommitted and went to Tech, and they picked me up, and I never looked back, and I went in there with a big, big chip on my shoulder. Like, I'm gonna let you guys know that you should have, you know, recruited me earlier. So had a great time there, man. Had a lot of great players that played at UVA at that time. So I got, and you can stop me at any time, Joe, but I got there.
Well, let's talk about your time at UVA, because I think that's interesting.
Yeah, good, yeah.
I mean, you had a chance to represent your home state as a guy from Richmond. What was your time like there? I mean, when you got there, you did this in the days where there wasn't a transfer portal. There wasn't a free transfer.
Right.
Coaches could leave, but players couldn't. You had to sit out a year if you left. I mean, things have changed dramatically to benefit the players, but, mm-hmm. you know, it sounds to me like you fell in love with UVA and it was the right school in the right place, and you were representing your home state there. I mean, was it like that for you? I mean, let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, it was pretty cool because at first, Tech was probably a bigger name to me coming out of high school, but I sort of got privy to UVA during my fourth Union days, and I had a chance to go up there and visit the school, and I sort of fell in love. But at that time, they really weren't recruiting me. But when I did get up there, I just, like, fell in love with the process. George Wells already had he built a legacy there. We had some really good players, Thomas Jones being one who that year in, what was it, 99. He was up for the Heisman with Peter Warwick and some other guys, and he went, I think, top five, top six in the NFL draft that year, 99. 2000 draft, I'm sorry. But, yeah, it was a wonderful time. And I sort of fit in like a peg, you know. I fell in love with the process. I fell in love with the school, and I saw an opportunity for me to play early, and I did. So I played, you know, as a freshman and went straight through. But I was sort of prepped coming from Fork Union to do that. And they gave me some opportunities. I mean, they were actually throwing me the ball. Dan Ellis, David Rivers, those are the quarterbacks that were there at that time. So they gave me some great opportunities. And like I said, I just took advantage of them as a young freshman.
Well, you know, this show is it's about prospects in the draft process. Many of our listeners enjoy hearing stories about how people transition to the league. And it sounds to me like, you know, you had a great time at UVA. It was the right fit for you at the right time. Things worked out. But let's talk about your, you know, transition to the NFL. I mean, what was your combine experience like? What was your pro day experience like? I've had people on here that didn't have either one of those, that were just free. Like our mutual friend, Mark Parson, great guy. You know, he had a situation where, he found his way on an NFL team and, by hook or by crook, and didn't have a combine invite. But what was the process for you like? Because, I mean, you went, if memory serves me, you were a third round guy. So did you go through these processes? What were they like for you? What was it like to go through that process? I kind of feel like sometimes it had to be more like you were auditioning for a TV show and people were picking people that way. Yeah, but what was it like for you?
It was I did really well at UVA. I really caught fire my third year, which I was about to go. I was All-American that year. I was about to leave that year, but I wanted to win. We didn't do too well as a team, but my fourth year was a solid year for me. And my experience going into the draft, because I got hurt the last game of the season, our bowl game against West Virginia. That's when Pac-Man Jones was there, and I dislocated my elbow. So my experience was a little nerve-wracking. So what I had to do is I had to rehab. I dislocated my elbow, so I had to rehab. So I sort of went down to this is New Orleans. This is back when one of the better speed trainer guys is Tom Shaw. Down in New Orleans, and we had a bunch of guys that went in the draft. I mean, we had Ike Taylor. He was down there. We had what's the running back that came from Penn State that year? Larry Johnson was down there. So we had a lot of studs down there. We were just out there working out and training, and you know, we were down there for 2 or 3 months just training and prepping. And my training was a little different because I was still injured, so I could run, but I couldn't do anything else. You know, as a young man, you still try to get some catching in. But I had to rehab, and at that time, just going through the whole draft process, you're coming from school. The guys normally first go to the bowl games or the senior bowl games. So I was an invite to the senior bowl. I couldn't play in it. It was Mobile, Alabama, I think. So I couldn't play in it. But I went out there, shook some hands with some of the scouts, and they would sort of just, you know, give me insight of what they were looking at and talking about from first to third based on my 40. And so that was – it was a little pressure, but you're like, okay, I got to figure out how to run a fast 40. I trained there, and then the actual combine itself, that's a whole podcast in itself, is a really weird experience. It's like a hurry-up-and-go type experience, and it's like it's almost like a meatpacking show. You know, who has the bigger muscles, who's faster, who can jump the highest, and the whole building is freezing cold. I don't know why they do that like that, but it's cold. And I, at that time, once again, I still was hurt, so I didn't run, but I did everything else. I didn't lift weights either. But I saw the whole process. You get a chance to – go ahead.
No, go ahead. Just finish your thought.
Oh, yeah. You had a chance to sit down with some of the coaches, and at that time – so I got drafted to Philly. At that time, I had a chance to sit with Philly and about four or five other teams, and I think I made a pretty good impression on Philly.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there is obviously the physical component to what you do at these tryouts, whether it is a Senior Bowl or Shrine Bowl or you get to the combine or your pro days. I mean, but as an athlete, that also has to be kind of like second nature to you. What is the mental aspect of that like when you have to sit down across from these coaches? We've seen the interviews. I mean, we were, you know, I'll give you an example. We were out in Indianapolis last year for the combine doing our scouting mm-hmm. for the magazine. And, you know, nowadays there were 30,000 fans in those stadium in Lucas Oil Stadium last year. And it's flooded. It's no longer private. And, you know, there's mm-hmm. sure you go and do your interviews, but the process is regimented and the mental aspect has got to be just as demanding for you guys as the physical aspect. Which one did you prefer? Did you not, I know you were hurt. So you couldn't do some of the drills and things like that, but was it better for you to just do the physical stuff or were these guys coming in hot and heavy, you know, and trying to put your page in a corner, see how you'd react to their pressure tactics and things like that too? Or do you have a funny story about any of the coaching? Go ahead.
Yeah, all of the above. They put a lot of pressure. The way it's designed, I think it's a pressure weekend anyway. I mean, they want to see who can focus, who can perform under that type of pressure. And I'm sort of glad that they do allow fans in there now. That's a whole level of energy for a guy that's looking to run the best time of his life. So, you know, it's the fans bring that type of atmosphere. But back when I was there, it was a quiet as a mouse. You just saw coaches in the stands and scouts and some of the decision makers. But, yeah, they have the Wonderlic test. They have the interview with the coaches. The interview with the coach is probably the best part, I thought, in terms of the mental part, because you're just talking. And at that time, they sort of ask you questions like, you know, they know what. They've done all of their homework. That's one of the things the NFL do. They do a lot of their homework. So they sort of know the offense you come from. They know how you play. They know sort of your better routes and sort of your better games. And so, you know, I can, for whatever reason, remember the Philly interview the best, but we were just talking about the West Coast offense because that's what I grew up in at UVA. My last 2 years was the West Coast offense, and that's what Philly ran with Donovan McNabb at that point. And so I was just talking from a perspective of I understood the offense, and I think they were pretty impressed that I understood where and how to make the offense go. And then, you know, I think some of the guys that do better in the interviews, you just, you know, basically being yourself. You're like, hey, man, it's either they're going to pick me or they don't. So we actually had a couple laughs in that room, which I think loosened them up, and they thought, hey, this guy would be good for our locker room. But it is, like I said, it's pressure. I would have rather done the whole thing, just, you know. But I think I made such a good impression that when they came to my pro day, I had about 25, 26 teams at the pro day. And then after the pro day, Philly came back with David Culley, Coach Culley, and he did a one-on-one workout. And I had an idea. I was like, I think they really like me. I just don't know when they're going to pick me. So, it was a pretty cool process at the combine, but it's a very nerve-wracking day. And you got to find a way to mentally stay cool and calm and just be ready. Because it's a lot of like lunch line type feel. It's like, all right, who's up next? And you're like, how do you stay warm? How do you stay locked in? How do you stay focused?
When you're waiting your turn in line.
I think guys are getting that science down a little bit more too. What did you say?
That's cool. I said it's almost like, how do you stay focused when you're just waiting to be the next man up, right? It's like that's got to be grueling.
Yeah, it is. I mean, once again, it's like I look at some of the things I've done over the course of my career, and I'm like, how the heck did I do that? You're just in a different mindset. So you look back on a combine, and I came out with some of the studs, man, some of the guys that's going to be Hall of Famers. Andre Johnson was there, and I couldn't believe that was a big receiver. I was like 215. He was 235, and he was running 4.3s. I was more like a 4.5 guy. And I was like, I got some competition here. But it was cool to see how guys went about their business.
And I'm sure everybody trains different. Everybody has a different approach to it. But let's fast forward a little bit. What was it like to get that call when you knew you were drafted, the pressure was off, you had done everything you could do, and you reached the final level, right? It's like, what was that like when you got that call and you signed that first contract?
Oh, man, it was pretty cool. Like, it was actually really, really cool. I'm sort of downplaying it. So that was 2003, and that's when they had all three rounds the first day. So it was a very long day. And, you know, I'm grateful that I got called, but it was a very long, long day. You know, the first round takes about almost 2 hours. So, and I was projected first through third. I didn't run the best 40, so I figured I'd fall to the second or third. Got the. So I think at this point, I was at my mother and father's house, and the family was over there, my friends over there, all close friends and family, and we're watching the draft, you know, cooking and having fun, guys outside throwing the football. And by the second or third round, I wanted to sort of get away. I was like, oh my gosh, man, I'm slipping. It's just like slipping away. And I think I went outside, and I just got called. My father came out, and we just started talking a little bit. And I never was at the point where I was like, oh, I feel terrible right now. It was just like, let's hurry up and get this thing done. So I was in the house, and I think I was sort of leaning over my mom at that point. We were having a conversation, and then she was sitting at the table, and the phone rang. And I was like, you know, everybody be quiet. You know, this is it looks like a 215. It was a 215 number. And at the time, I didn't equate 215 to Philly. So I pick it up, and it was Coach Reed. And, you know, he has a very distinct voice, you know, a hearty, hefty voice. And yeah. I know people are screaming in the background. I'm like, y'all should be quiet. And he's like, hey, Billy, but, you know, you ready to be an Eagle? I said, am I ready to be an Eagle? I wanted you to call me, like, two rounds ago.
But,
yeah, it was pretty cool because, you know, he said a couple of things, some things I don't remember. And I was just so excited to have the conversation. I really don't remember, but I just know, you know, he had picked me third round. I think it was I was a 96 pick, and my brother, Angelo Crowell, that played at UVA with me, he was a 95th pick. He went to Buffalo, so we went back to back.
Oh my goodness! How great
it was pretty
that?
Cool, man. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That is an excellent story.
I don't know if I was 95 and he was 96, but I know we went back to back. And so after that, everybody screaming, the family screaming. You know, it was like a surreal moment. And, you know, it was almost like waking up from a dream. So when I went up to the first OTA, because it was the first OTA, the first rookie minicamp, I walked up, and this is right when they made the new stadium. So it was a new stadium, new facilities, everything. It was really nice. And I was like, wow, man, I'm in the NFL. I cannot believe this. And it was like waking up from a dream, and you walk into the locker room, and everything Philly, the Eagles did was top-notch. I mean, from facilities to, of course, the coaches and the back office and the executive team, it was just top-notch. And I went in there, and I believe I signed my contract. So I didn't sign my contract until, like, right before the third OTA, I think. I think that's when I signed it. So, yeah, it was because my agent was still working out the details and everything. But it was a very surreal moment. And then you see all the guys come in for the camps. Like, oh, I see them playing on TV. I see them last year.
I see them.
You know, one of the cool things, too, is where when I connected with the team before at the interview at the combine, I think they were impressed that I watched the team. And I was talking about how Corey Detmer had got dislocated his elbow in the field and how he was, you know, acting on the field, and they all thought it was funny. I was like, yeah, why did he do that like that? He could have, you know, been a little tougher. But, yeah, it was a surreal moment walking in that locker room.
Well, you know, that's a nice segue to my next question. It sounds to me like, you know, there was a little bit of, you know, shock and awe when you walk into that locker room for the first time. But overall, during your experience in the NFL, what surprised you the most about your time in the NFL? I mean, something maybe you didn't expect in that transition. What would that be?
The transition, I think the biggest thing I quickly realized is the speed of the game. The game was super fast. Everybody, when I say everybody was fast. D linemen could run as fast as you could the first 5-6 yards. Amazing. And you quickly notice that everybody's good too. So you in college, you may have there's a big drop off from maybe the second team or the third team, huge drop off. NFL knows there's no real drop off of athletes, you know, and football players. But you know, everybody's fast, super intense, and then the way guys went about their business as professionals. And you know, one of the biggest things I had to learn was how to play fast and make quicker decisions while playing fast. And just like I said, it's just the speed of the game was the biggest piece, and how big people were, man. It's like I was a big guy for a receiver. These guys are big, man. These linebackers are just as fast as I am. And they're 260, 250. And I'll never forget playing the first, I think it was the second, first preseason game against the Steelers. And this is back when the linebackers were linebackers. They weren't like the strong safety looking linebackers. They were. You remember the Steelers linebackers back then?
The Levon Kirklands of the world.
Yeah,
Chad
man.
Brown.
I mean, he's got huge, huge. And that they put and coach put me in for the first play, and I played a lot of slot. And my first route was to run across the field underneath these linebackers.
Oh, no.
I'm like, yeah. There's a coach, you tripping. But, I think that was the biggest shock is, like, how intense it was, how fast it was, and how – and then how smart guys were. They, guys were just really smart, could break down a play. And, you know, we had actually a great team in Philly. A lot of guys that were smart, veterans, Troy Benson, Brian Dawkins, Bobby Taylor, Donovan McNabb. We had Todd Pinkston as receiver, James Thrash. We had a heck of an offensive line. I mean, we just had a squad, and that's why we won so much. But it was a great experience.
So, look, you've had enormous success while playing the game. There's no doubt about that. Is there a favorite moment at either level, like college or pro? If you had a favorite moment, if you want to relive that moment, what would that be?
I'll give you two. I'll pick college and I say pros. I think college was probably my junior year. We had some really quick dope moments in college, but I think the junior year when we beat Clemson down in Death Valley on a last second fade to the back of the end zone to me. Yeah, I thought it was
cool,
man, because that crowd was a crazy crowd, man.
Yeah, you
so,
can shut them up.
Yeah, they were quiet as mouse, and you know, but it was a cool moment that they threw me that ball. In the pros, I think it was going to the Super Bowl, like when we beat the Falcons. We beat the Falcons, and that game was so – it was 2004. The game was so cold, man. We were out there freezing. And you remember, they're a dome team, so that gave us a great advantage. And I think we did a – heck of a job bottling Vic up on defense and offense. We did our thing, we were very steady. But yeah, I think after winning that game, that was like really cool that, wow, you know, my second year in the NFL and we're going to the Super Bowl. So it was awesome.
Well, look, Billy, we're getting to that point in our show where I do a lightning round with all of our guests. And I've got four or five questions I'm going to throw at you and, you know, try to, you know, throw you off guard with some of them, but also have some fun with them. So I hope you're ready for it. You ready to do a lightning round with us?
Let's do it, buddy.
All right, man. So the first one is a little bit of a softball. I'm not going to come at you hard and heavy that quickly, but if you could play a different sport other than football, professionally, I mean, what would that sport be and why?
Great question. I guess it would have been basketball. I never really dove heavy into basketball, but I think I had some point guard skills. I'm 6'4". I would probably been a smaller point guard in the NBA right now, but I was 6'4", and I enjoyed playmaking. But I never really worked on my skills. Everything was just athleticism. But my father was a great basketball player. But, yeah, it would be basketball just because it would have been cool to play point guard on a professional
level. Okay. And UVA doesn't have a bad basketball team either, by the way. So
not
I
at
think
all.
You would have fit in pretty well there. All right, so which player, and it doesn't matter, college or pro, was it the hardest to beat one-on-one?
Oh, I would say pros. I mean, we had we were stacked to the brim on our team. We had Troy Vincent, Bobby Taylor was my height, probably at that time my weight. We had Lito Shepard. We had Sheldon Brown. And we had some younger guys like Rod. I would say – They on a pro level, it was them. On a college level, it was my freshman year against Florida State. It was Mario Edwards. Because that's the first time I've ever seen the first time I've ever seen a cornerback that big and that physical. I was not ready for it because I didn't study for him that well as a freshman. I walked out the huddle. I was like, why is this safety following you over here? And it was a freaking Mario Edwards. And super athletic. So, yeah, that was probably as a freshman, the hardest guy I went up against.
So, did you have a player you dreamed about beating when you were a kid and never got a chance to meet them on the field? You know, like maybe they're at the end of their career and you were playing on the playground or the school field pretending that you were beating them and all of a sudden you line up against them on the other side?
You mean like beating them like one-on-one playing against them?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it wasn't necessarily a player. It normally was probably was a team. Like, I was a 49ers fan. Well, I jumped around a bit. 49ers fan, Lions fan, because they had Barry Sims. And then, of course, being so close to D.C., I cheered for the Skins too. But it was more so like I was, playing in the Super Bowl against a team and catching the last pass. But I never had a player in my mind like, yeah, I want to go against him. You know, that was never the case.
I got you. So here's one out of the blue. Do you have, and it doesn't have to be a Billy McMullen highlight, but do you have a favorite football highlight of all time? You mentioned Barry Sanders. You mentioned San Francisco. Both Sanders and San Francisco have plenty of highlights to talk about. Or do you? But it could be one of yours. I mean, do you have a highlight? Was that Clemson one the highlight, your favorite highlight, or was there a classic one that you prefer?
That's a great question, man. Oh, man, you call it a lightning round. I mean, there's so many sweet plays that we're watching. And you know what it was? I'll pull this out, man, because it changed my life. It was, let me get this right, was it Curtis Enos, Penn State? It had to be 96. So this is when he scored like three touchdowns. I forget who they playing. And if you go back and look at the highlight tape, I mean, he crushed that game. His first game of the year, he had three touchdowns, and I think it may have been Michigan. But it was one of his last touchdowns. He dove like and stretched out for the end zone. And I'm a young kid. I'm a junior in high school, and I'm like, oh, that was pretty sweet. And so that very next day, we played on Saturday. I scored like four touchdowns, actually five. One got called back. But I scored four touchdowns, and one of my third touchdown, I did the exact same thing he did. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Curtis Enos, scoring against a big time, college football, and I'm out here doing the same thing he's doing. That was pretty cool. So that's one
cool.
of the highlights that stuck out, that sort of changed me in terms of, getting on the map.
Gotcha. Well, look, I've got one last question before we let you go. This is going to be out of the blue. So you're a kid again, and one NFL player runs over to you at the end of the game, a la like the Joe Green Coke kid, moment, and tosses you his game-worn jersey. Whose jersey would that belong to?
Oh, man, good question. What age kid?
Hey, you're a kid, so it could be anything. It can go back.
All right, I got to say, I was a Jerry Rice fan. I was a, Joe Montana fan. If Barry taking his jersey off and throwing it, I went to the Super Bowl last year, and when I saw him in the players' lounge, and had a bunch of guys from all different areas, like Joe Namath, everybody's in there. So when I saw Barry, I was a fanboy. I was like, hey, Barry, I gotta get a picture. This is freaking Barry Sanders. Mark can tell you. I say, Mark, you gotta take this picture, man. That's freaking Barry Sanders over there. So
my brother loves Sanders too.
Oh man, that guy!
My brother has the helmet. He's got the game worn jersey. He's got the autograph. He's got like 20 of his rookie cards. He was his absolute favorite. So I understand.
Yeah, he was a beast, man.
Well, hey Billy, before we let you off the clock here, tell everyone how they can find you and connect with you potentially on social media or your website.
Yeah, just follow me on Billy Mac Speaks. That's Instagram. That's normally the main account I use. Billy Mac Speaks. Post things about motivational speaking and just some cool stuff, doing around the NFL and being around some pretty cool folks and helping a lot of student athletes. So, and athletes alike. So that's Billy
Mac.
Cool,
man. Well,
Speaks. Billy Mac Speaks Instagram.
Cool. And look, big thanks for you to be on. And again, want to thank our sponsor, iHeartRadio, where you can find all their favorite music, podcasts, and radio all for free all the time. Bill, thanks again for coming on the show. And for those listening, remember when Draft Nation, even though we may be off the air, we're always on the clock for you. But tonight, we've got a second guest starting at 9:30, Brad Johnson. I'll get to him in a second. But Billy, got to let you go. Thank you very much for being on the show tonight.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right, bud. Talk soon. So those of you that are sticking around for the second half of the show, let me introduce you to a friend of mine named Brad Johnson. And we just got done talking to a guy that played in the league, and you had a chance to hear a little bit about you know, what he did to get there. And part of what Brad does with his company called Edge is they mentor student athletes and they help them develop a winning mindset. And you heard Billy say earlier about how much that was important, that mental aspect of the game was important to him, not just on the field, but when he was doing interviews to get drafted in the third round by the Eagles, he went through a gauntlet of teams and how you had to be mentally prepared to answer their questions and how being yourself and being ready to go was important. Well, that's what Brad focuses on. And we're going to get in. Look, Brad's a Pittsburgher by birth, and so we'll get into some black and gold comments about Matt Canada a little bit later. And obviously he lives in Buffalo now, so you 716ers that want to talk about Josh Allen, we'll get to there too. But I want to spend a little bit more time talking to Brad early on about his company, Edge. Brad, thank you very much for coming on Draft Nation, and welcome to the show. Are you ready to go on the clock, my friend?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, look, I gave you a little bit of an introduction here, but tell everybody what you do at Edge, how you do it, and how they can get a hold of you.
Okay, Edge, we call Edge Institute for Athletes. We're right now basically an online facility, but we help student athletes develop an elite mindset to overcome things like comparison, negative self-talk, so you can unlock the performance and full potential. We work on giving the tools and skills to create life success on and off the court, in the classroom. I mean, as a student athlete, a lot of them deal with the pressures are coming from, small towns where there's a big fish in a small pond, and, moving up to different colleges and that, they are the small fish in a big pond now. That creates a lot of different pressures and things for them to go through. So we work with them on, there's the framework we kind of have, and there's 10 pillars that we work towards, having a elite mindset so they can grow and not stay stagnant compared to having a fixed mindset to where you're not willing to learn. Motivation and commitment. I mean, you've got to be committed to play college sports, high school sports. It's, the talent and competition gets much higher the higher up the levels you go. We work on focus.
Well, can I ask you a question there? Because there's a few things in there that I think that, as a show that focuses on drafts, right, that we do a lot of prospects. Tonight we had Billy McMullen, former NFLer, on right before you, talking about his pro day experience, his draft and NFL combine experience. From someone sitting on your side of the table, someone who's there to help train these athletes mentally for what they're going to face, what are some of those obstacles that you run into all the time? Like if our listeners here love this stuff and many of their kids are going through this right now, what pieces of advice can you give to them that you know that they're going to hit? And here's a couple of obstacles, and this is how you get around them. Maybe do a little like free training session here for the parents that are listening and the coaches that are listening tonight.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, one of the more interesting things that we run into is that athletes in high school, we've got some ninth graders in the group, and then we're also working with SEC baseball players, Notre Dame volleyball players and such. And everybody, it's the pattern of issues actually stays the same. It's a lot of negative self-talk, getting down on yourself after a bad play, trying to jump back here to I'm just drawing a blank here.
is there a state of mind issue that you run into a lot? I played through college, right? And that's where it ended for me. And there was a jump up in the competition where you see where once, like you said, you were big fish, small pond. And all of a sudden you get to the big pond and everybody's as good as you. And it's like, how do you overcome those kind of things where it's like you're used to always being dominant and now you might be one of the masses? How do you advise a student athlete to prepare themselves for that kind of thing? And or how do you advise a student athlete? One of the challenges I had is I blew out an Achilles tendon, and it just takes forever to heal. And back then we weren't back in 4 months. We weren't back until it was a year, right? You were just sitting out. You weren't doing anything until that tendon healed. From an injury perspective, how do you teach patience to kids that have been mostly invulnerable those lives? I think those are the two things I wanted to ask you. So I'm asking them now. So like, how do you go from that big fish, small pond competition? Are you ready to take that next step? And then how do you coach them to recover from an injury?
Well, you've got to trust the process. At that level, all the coaches and the medical staff have the processes and workouts and systems to get you from injured back onto the field, the court, the ice, whatever your sport you're on. So you've got to just remove yourself from the outcome, trust the process, and take the little wins day by day. As you heal, get better, get more movement back, get your skill back. And even when, you know, going back to the big fish, small pond, getting into the higher level of the competition, it's the same thing. The coaches, you're working on the fundamentals. Go back to Kobe Bryant. He would go into practice at 4 o'clock in the morning and work on the fundamentals. One thing we try to teach our student athletes is half of fundamentals is mental. You know, going back and doing simple footwork, maintaining mechanics when you're throwing, just keeping your eye on the ball, get the barrel of the bat on the ball, following your steps in for your swings and watching the pitches come in. And even for hockey, you have your certain fundamentals of how you skated, where the puck needs to be on your stick, and just maintaining the simplicity of the game and not trying to make it too complicated.
You know, that's a great point, in particular for hockey. I mean, there was when I was growing up, obviously it was the Mario Lemieux era, and it was the end of the Wayne Gretzky era. And I remember Wayne Gretzky once saying a couple of things. I mean, the first was he was asked why he would ride a bike after a game. And he was like, because you never know when the game is going to end. You always need those legs, right? And then the other comment that he made that one of our guests a few weeks ago, Kerry Krug, who does professional, you know, athlete performance stuff for NHL guys and is also a coach, a former player himself, you know, he said, you know, Wayne Gretzky said, practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. And I think your comments about the, you know, the working on those fundamentals at 4 a.m. so that you can be the best is because you've ingrained those fundamentals into yourself as part of that. And that fundamental is a mental aspect of the game. I find that really interesting. And I think you're point on, you're smack dead center on it. I think those are the kind of things that separate you when everybody is about the same. There's always going to be someone that stands out and is just, you know, generational talent. But when everybody else is about the same, it's those things that bring you back and get you those wins. You know, whether they're, like you said, you're recovering from an injury and getting to a point where, you know, that incremental growth back to where you are, or in a game, you know, during gameplay, or, you know, during a loss, and how do you recover from that when you have to go out and play the next day? And things like that. I find that really, really interesting. I think you really did a good job hitting the nail on the head there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like going back to the fundamentals and Kobe at 4 a.m., he would have an extra practice in before anybody else walked on the court. So after a year, he had, you know, a couple hundred more practices in before anybody else. And the repetition you get from that is just going to put you light years ahead of anybody else that's supposedly at the same level. So it's just the mentality of going out and taking reps and doing what you know you need to do to get better.
So how do you as a company and you as a coach gauge success? You know, sometimes you're going to see varying levels of it. Some people are going to be night and day different. Other people are going to be incrementally different. Is it if you gauge success, do you grade it out? Is there a system by which you give metrics to the people that sign up with you so that they know that they're getting better at where they are? How do you gauge it, and how do you share that information with them to show them that they're getting better at certain things?
So a lot of what we do is open discussion and back and forth with the athletes, talk to them about their problems, talk to them about what they're seeing, just a general wellness. And they generally feel better after we've worked with them quite a while. Just they've opened up. We had one athlete that he moved on from a junior college to a major university, and his just mentality and attitude is so much better than what it was before. He's just really lit up. So we don't have like any sort of data or anything like that that we have numbers on, say more of an eye test, a field test, that brings the athletes along.
Now, do you align yourself with, schools, or is your process, are you out there recruiting players that you think can make better? How do you bring people into your classes, and is it sort of a mixture of both?
It's kind of a mixture of both. Our head coach Sean French is really close to a number of schools and institutions down in the Fort Myers area in Florida, to where what I've done a lot of is just reaching out, explaining what we do, and as soon as we bring people in, we'll let them sit in the Zoom link, and they'll like what we do, and they sign up for the weekly calls that we do, and then we also do offer one-on-one coaching.
How do you deal with someone? Sorry to interrupt. Okay. Finish your thought there. I apologize.
No, we offer one-on-one coaching to anybody who would be interested.
And let's talk a little bit about the one-on-one coaching for a second, because you mentioned a term a little earlier that I don't want to skip over, because I think it's something that's become more and more prevalent. We've seen guys take off a year to recover from, the mental part of the game. You mentioned mental wellness. We've even seen athletes commit suicide and try to commit suicide, things like that, when they're unable to do that. How do you deal with a student that's come to you that you've identified that might have, a mental wellness issue? Are there classes? Are there coaching? I mean, do you work alongside, professionals that you bring in to help them get over that, or is it something that you guys have on staff? How does that work for you guys internal?
For the short time that I have been working with the group, I have luxury of not having to deal with that. If we did run into an athlete that was having that some sort of problem, we would bring in counselors or contact someone at their school or their parents. We have relationships with all the athletes' parents. If we felt that something was a concern, we would definitely bring someone in that would be closer to the athletes than ourselves.
Yeah, I know that's changed in particular the last 5 years, but over the last 10, in my era, and I'm guessing your era too, it was like, hey, rub some dirt in it, get up, walk it off kind of thing, and they didn't care. You got to be mentally tough. And now that I think that there's been proper diagnosis and studies on that stuff, I think that that's a big part of not just a culture shift, but a culture shift within the game space. And you see, there are teams that bring in wellness coaches just to get people in the right spaces, and whether that's, I've seen hypnosis, I've seen, group therapies, I've seen a lot of these things that are out there that even train you to think that you're going to win, you're going to succeed, and it's almost like a mantra that folks go through. Do you have coaches that come in and do that for you for your team's perspective, where they get up and have these, like these group sessions where they're talking like a sports psychologist would?
We don't have a sports psychologist, but we do have an NLP practitioner. She works with timeline therapy, working on some hypnosis, neuro-linguistics processing, we have it all. So we do have them.
Yeah,
there.
That's okay. Pretty cool. Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you there. Go ahead. Finish.
That's okay. I mean, what you do there, it's a lot of some. It's kind of interesting how the mindset training I have gone through mirrors a lot of the neurolinguistics side of things, where everything starts in your mind and then eventually works its way out into reality, and it just there's a lot of looking at things differently like that. Like really appreciate it, 'cause I think that so growing up it was just tough it out, and there's more of the mental side to it and the emotional side to it than there ever was before.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here, and I'm going to put you on the spot, and I hope you don't mind a little bit. So obviously I know you bleed black and gold just like I do. You're a former Pittsburgher, but you're in Buffalo, and I'm certain that you can't avoid watching some of those Buffalo teams up there, and in particular Josh Allen. And I mentioned Josh Allen for two reasons. One is I think a lot of people these days are comparing him to a very young Ben Roethlisberger. He's got the size. Ben was very mobile as a younger quarterback, extends plays, has a cannon for an arm. Josh has had an okay year, but not a Super Bowl caliber year just yet. I mean, you as a fan, can you divorce yourself from being a fan and put yourself back in sort of like an edge compare and say, this is what I would tell him to maybe coach him to do a little bit better or improve his game. But also as a fan, what's it like to watch a young Ben Roethlisberger out there every week, in some cases dominating teams? He's got to be, a fan favorite locally. And I know that, Buffalo is looking for that savior to take him to the promised land. Finally, is Josh Allen the guy?
I think he is. He actually, if you look at his play this year, it's been a little bit up and down, but he has that bit of magic that Ben had, that short memory. And what I mean by that is, I don't know how many times I remember watching Ben throw an interception, walk off to the sideline, shaking his head, clap his hands, then come out in the next series and throw the same pass with the same amount of fire on it, you have Hines Ward grab it and run it in the end zone. You need to have that short memory and be able to, like I said before, trust your process, go through your reads, know what you did wrong on the last one, and make the proper correction so it doesn't happen again. Josh Allen up here, it's interesting because he has the most interceptions in the league, but he also has the most touchdowns in the league. So he's not afraid to he'll get picked off, but then come back and do the same play, fake the DB out or whatever he needs to do, hit the receiver, and get the touchdown out of it. So it's just having that short memory and be able to come back to your process and just trusting what you've done and the work you've put in to make sure to know you're going to be successful with it.
Yeah, there are guys out there that just thrive as gunslingers, right? They like the Wild West. Brett Favre comes to mind when I think of that. And it doesn't matter how many interceptions they throw because they're also going to throw five touchdowns, right? And Josh Allen strikes me as that kind of guy. But he also strikes me like Ben in the beginning had a lot of those same sort of hiccups where it was like, they haven't taken the reins off of me yet, but I've got this cannon of an arm and just let me unleash it. And then I'll learn to control it. And Josh is in that transition period where he's now beyond his first contract. He's settling in. He's a mature NFL player with many years in front of him. Do you see him? I mentioned this before. Do you see him getting the Bills to a championship level? I mean, is this the guy to do it?
I mean, I think he can, but football is the quarterback gets a lot of the notoriety up as a team sport. Like this year, they were primed and ready to actually do that, but they lost half their secondary, and Matt Milano was the middle linebacker, so you're missing a good portion of that side of the ball, and you're playing teams like Kansas City and Cincinnati up until losing Burrow. as a quarterback goes, yeah, definitely I feel Josh Allen has what it takes to win the Super Bowl.
You know, and I think in that division, too, it's a down year, man. I mean, the Patriots are finally down and out. The Jets, with the loss of Aaron Rodgers, has basically made them a one-dimensional team. And then you've got the Miami Dolphins, which they've already gotten one victory at home against, you know, just in front of them. They've just had this, you know, they're like a light switch. Sometimes they're really on, and other times they're really off. And there's no in-between there. Do you think they can correct this and still come back and win the division, or is this Miami's to lose?
I think they can correct it and come back and win the division. They were kind of having the same issues Pittsburgh were having with their offensive coordinator. Just wasn't letting Josh Allen be Josh Allen and what he was able to do. Even just in the middle of the game, there was I saw it on CBS or that, you know, he felt unleashed again. He felt like he could play like he knows how to play. You're talking about have that gunslinger mentality and just rip it down the field. That's one thing that we're seeing in Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett this year. They are just not letting him rip it. They're not throwing it down the field more than 6 or 7 yards. And the Steelers have the least amount of turnovers in the league, but that also means they're not taking a whole lot of risk with the ball to push it downfield to make the play. To where you're seeing a lot of that.
Great, great point. And as you mentioned the situation here in Pittsburgh, I know that you're, you know, an expat here, but the collective sigh, the air out of the Met Canada balloon happened today, finally, with the announcement that they relieved him of his offensive coordinator duties. And I think after this last week where they had a very winnable game against the Browns, and 3 weeks ago where they had a very winnable game against Jacksonville, and it was the same plays over and over and over again, and it was like George Pickens on a fade route or not. No George Pickens, no route tree. Or, you know, with Kenny Pickett, it's like, just don't throw it over the middle. We don't want any interceptions. And it's like, you know, it's time to maybe take the reins off of him. He just played his 16th game. He's just now shed his rookie skin. And it's time for – now there's no more excuses, right? Canada's gone. And the city is, you know, there's that embarrassing moment on ESPN a few weeks ago where, you know, during a hockey game, the fans are chanting, "Fire Canada." And I think now that the scapegoat's gone, a lot of these players are going to have to step it up. Deontay Johnson's going to have to catch passes he was dropping. George Pickens has got to run more than one route. Kenny Pickett's going to be asked to throw it across the middle, throw it into danger zones, and maybe have a couple of picks. For someone like Kenny Pickett that might have been held back, do you think, as a sports psychology guy, do you think taking the leash off of him and letting him roam free, like you just said, is going to work? Or do you think it's going to backfire on the Steelers?
I think we'll find out. It all depends on, you know, his skill level. Like, I'm not sure how much of a skier you are if you ever gone downhill skiing. When you're attacking the mountain and you're on your toes going downhill and have control of it, you want it to go at a certain speed and a certain rhythm. If you're held back for some reason, like say you're boots loose or something like that, you're not going to see as well. You're going to think about it, and you're going to, you know, yard sail down the mountain. Equivalent in hockey, that you're probably just not,
sure.
if you're gripping a stick too tight, or not, you know, too loose, too tight, getting feeling the pressure, you're not going to pass, shoot, do what you need to do like you normally would, starting to be overthinking. I think, like I said, this is the time for Kennedy to shine or move on. Let him go at his full speed and see what happens. I was looking at the advanced stats today on ESPN on it, and there's a whole lot of green in the middle of the field that defenses don't have to cover. And I think that can be opened up and a little more downfield, and just see what happens. I think he did it in the pit, so there's no reason why he can't do it now.
Yeah, and you've got another big game, back-to-back division games. They got to go into Cincinnati next week and play a Joe Burrow-less Bengals team. So we'll see what happens there. But look, Brad, we're coming to the end of our time here. We only have about 5 more minutes to go before I have to let you go. And we do this with every one of our guests. I put everybody through a bit of a lightning round. We have some fun with them. I ask some questions and, you know, get away from the serious answers and have a little bit more fun. So are you ready for the lightning round?
Shoot it.
All right, man. Well, I'm going to start out with a little bit of a softball here. Who is your favorite player to coach through Edge? The person, and it doesn't have to be a professional, just anybody that you've coached because you've seen the progress from them, they've learned from your teachings. Which student has been your best and why?
I'm kind of new and I've worked a lot with the groups. We have a ninth grader out of California that we work with, and just in the short time I've been working with him, he has just you can see it, everything light up in him, his excitement for the game, his just passion and all that energy. It's just infectious to be a part of.
Cool. Prediction for NFL Rookie of the Year. It has to be CJ Stroud, right? Or do you have someone else that's maybe a dark horse?
He's who I have. I was not expecting him to do as well as what he has, and it's been a complete surprise to me, but that's who I have right now.
Yeah, I think that it's hard to walk away. He's just done so much with what everybody perceived was so little, but if you look at that team, you know, not only have they brought him on, but they've also really shored up that offensive line, coupled with the emergence of Nico Collins and Tank Dell has just turned it on. And I think if Damian Pierce could just get his stuff together, they've got an all-pro running back there. And Devin Singletary's been done pretty well plugging in. And, of course, they've got a defensive head coach who I think is really kind of coaching up that team. I think Houston has done well, and it's because, you know, a guy like Stroud can step in and do that. So your favorite NHL team and why?
I have been a Buffalo Sabres fan for the last 20 years after I moved up here. Just got bit by the bug of the area, and the whole Ryan Miller, Thomas Vanek, Derek Roy, Core years, Jason Pominville. It was just ridiculously exciting at the time, and it's one of those infections that kind of never went away.
So that was like post, like, Alexander Mogilny, Pat LaFontaine. It was like that next era, guys.
Yeah, it was around 02, 03, 04-ish era. It was real exciting to watch this year. The time they won the President's Cup, Ryan Miller was just massively solid in that. It was just a whole lot of fun because this area where I lived at in Buffalo at the time, it was tough driving around neighborhoods because you had to stop for so many street hockey games.
That's awesome. That's a great story. So final question, lightning round. You've got a magical locker in your locker room at work, and you can go back in time and watch any sports game anywhere from the bench. What game do you go back to?
I would go back to I'm going to screw up what number it is. It's when the Steelers won the Super Bowl in Arizona, where D'Antonio Holmes had the catch.
There you go.
Harrison had the run back. It was just that game being there killed me at a young age.
Great answer. That is a great answer. Well, look, Brad, it was great to have you on the show. Welcome back anytime. But before we let you off the clock, tell everybody where they can find you and learn a little bit more about Edge.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Edge, check out the Terman Society podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find me on Instagram at Paranormal Brad. It's my coffee company you didn't get a chance to talk about. And find us at one of those places, and you'll be able to get a hold of somebody.
Brett, thank you very much for being on Draft Nation, and thanks again to our sponsor, iHeartRadio, tonight, where you could find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free all the time. And remember, while Draft Nation may be off the air, we are always on the clock for you. Brad, thanks again for being a guest. Let's have you on after the Super Bowl.
Thank you. Absolutely.
All right, my friend. Talk soon.
Yeah.